This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen. If you enjoy the arts, Philadelphia is your town. If you're a musician, an actor, an artist, a poet, a filmmaker, the city has become much more hospitable, affordable, supportive, and a creative place to live and work. Today's part three of our week-long series, Philadelphia Innovators, a chance to meet and talk with movers, shakers, and dreamers who are making a difference in the city. We have a quartet of guests who have joined us, and let me introduce them all to you. Perryvision DiVirgilio is a poet coach, artistic director for Philly Youth Poetry Movement. He's also a member of Spoken Soul 215, which hosts the monthly The Harvest at the World Cafe Live, usually the first Wednesday of the month. And Vision, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. Also with us is Michelle Pauls, co-founder and managing artistic director of the Barrymore award-winning theater company B Someday Productions, based in the Walking Fish Theater in Philadelphia's Kensington neighborhood. She's an actress, supervisors of Mythic Proportions, and that's a program at a neighboring high school. And Michelle, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
Oh, we're excited too. And also with us, and we have two more people to introduce, Stan Haliva, co-founder of and producing artistic director of the Be Someday Productions, which, as I said earlier, based at the Walking Fish Theater in Kensington neighborhood in Philadelphia. Stan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here, Marty.
These are the longest bios I've had to do, and I have one more. Here's Alex Shaw. He's a percussionist, a vocalist, composer, arts educator. He specializes in Brazilian music traditions. He's a member of Philadelphia's Spoken Hand Percussion Orchestra, musical director for the 14-piece Brazilian ensemble Alô Brasil, also a lead facilitator for liveconnections.org, and that's a music education nonprofit. And Alex Shaw, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
I'm curious about how you all ended up in this city. Let me go to you, Vision, first. Where did you grow up, and how did you end up in Philadelphia?
I was born and raised in North Philadelphia.
Oh, were you?
Yeah,
okay.
Born and raised. Product of the Philadelphia Public School, Simon Gratz High School, and I love it here. I've always loved it here. I have like ridiculous pride. No matter where I'm touring, I'm always, you know, I wear Philly on my chest like it's, you know, like it's armor.
Ridiculous pride.
I love being a Philadelphian.
And why is that?
Philly is a place like no other. You know, here is it's such a blue collar feel, but it's a real feel. You know, no people here don't kind of BS you. They tell it how it is, and you know if you're good, you know if you're not, you know if you need to work, because people will tell you. And that's the kind of people I want in my circle. I don't want a bunch of yes men in my circle. I love Philly for that reason.
You're nodding your head, Alex.
Yeah, well, I was just not. You know, he's talking about just kind of the standard. You know, people telling you how it is. You know, a lot of my colleagues in music, you know, say just how hard Philly is as a town. You know, for musicians, in the sense that if you don't have it, you know. They say if you can get out of Philadelphia, you know, you can make it.
It,
yeah, because it's just, you know, it's such a there's such a high standard for, you know, for the arts, you know, for culture, and like Vision said, you know, just people telling you like it is. So if they don't like what you're doing, they'll let you know.
And did you grow up around here as well?
No, I actually grew up in southwestern Virginia in Blacksburg.
Oh, really?
But I came to the area. I went to Swarthmore College and then moved here. So I've been here about 12 years.
And do you have that crazy pride that Vision has?
I'm gaining it. I have respect.
He's respect.
Yes.
Okay, that's a start.
Yeah.
How about for you, Michelle?
Well, I grew up in Allentown. Stan and I both grew up in Allentown. And I ended up in Philadelphia by... through some guy I knew, not Stan, but it was enough to keep me here. The art scene is really vibrant. The theater scene is really cooking, especially the small theater scene. There's so much opportunity. So we just took advantage of that, and now we're entrenched in our community, Kensington.
Exactly, Kensington. Tell us about Walking Fish and how you found that building and what you did when you found it to rehab it, I guess.
Well, yes, it is a lot about a place for us, because we're anchored right there in Kensington. So our building, we had decided that if we were going to continue in theater, because we had a small child together, we're a couple, and to continue in theater as we were, as vagabonds, we weren't sure whether we could subject our child to that kind of life when she was small. So we thought about dropping out, thought about getting some other kind of job, but we just couldn't do it. So after a while, we decided to create our own space where we could control our existence to some degree. And this day, we live above our theater.
Wow.
So our daughter doesn't have to have a babysitter when we go to work. She just, you know, is upstairs. And How did we find the space?
Yeah, well, I was reading that it was in, shall we say, a state of disrepair?
Oh, it was a wreck.
I mean, like, just holes and missing staircases and everything.
From the ceiling all the way down to the almost non-existent basement. And Stan was the general contractor. He did almost all of the work. He taught himself how to do it 15 months in the making.
Wow.
Our home and our theater.
But it was important to have a place, is what you're saying.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to be in a neighborhood, and we didn't want a place on Theater Row, you know, on Sansom Street or South Broad Street. We wanted to be in a neighborhood.
Well, and it's the Frankfurt Avenue Arts Corridor now, right?
That's right.
So
that's
you're part of a kind of a renaissance up there, I guess.
Well, when we first opened, what was like 5-6 years ago, there were like 3 arts businesses on the corridor, and now there are over 30.
Wow.
And we're at the northern end. Wow. We're the anchor on the northern end.
Well, let me go back to your vision, and you're a poet.
Yes.
When did you discover, maybe even fall in love with poetry?
My mother had me writing and reading at a very young age, but growing up in North Philly, you kind of like, you don't tell anybody that, you know, you don't, it was one of those things where, you know, I wrote underneath the covers and kind of hid the book underneath the bed, and then when I got to Dickinson College, it just opened up for me, expressing myself started opening up for me, and I kind of got, you know, I started thinking freely and critically, and it just took off from there.
Wow. And why were you hiding it? I mean, was it just, it wasn't cool?
It's not, I played basketball for grads during the time it was like a dynasty. So that was like the cool thing. That's what kind of got the girls. But you didn't tell anybody in North Philly, like, you know, I write poetry too. They're like, oh, okay, you know. So it wasn't the cool thing to be when I was a teenager. In my eyes, even though that's who I was, so I was kind of running from who I was for the longest.
And poetry kind of brought you back to who you were?
Poetry gave me purpose. You know, poetry is my purpose. You know, working with kids and teaching poetry is my purpose. So I was running for that for years, and now I'm comfortable being who I am.
Alex, let me go back to you. Sure. Do you come from a musical family?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually grew up in a family of classical musicians. And, you know, I have 2 younger brothers that today are classical musicians in, you know, in other parts of the country. And my father as well is he was the founder of the Audubon String Quartet. So I kind of grew up inside of that realm. But kind of made a hard left turn once I started coming of age. Yeah.
And what does that mean, a hard left turn?
Well, you know, I don't pursue you know, a career per se in classical music, but my passion is really in percussion, Latin Brazilian percussion. And you know, for my folks, it was kind of, I had to make a decision, you know, as a teenager, kind of like, I study classical piano. Are you going to do this, or are you going to do academia? You know, so I knew that I didn't want to do classical piano as a career, so the expectation was I would go and be a doctor.
Oh, is that right?
You know, so.
And here you are.
And
right?
Here I am, yeah.
but did you find that classical music gave you a bit of a, sort of an underpinning to do what you do now?
Absolutely. I mean, not only classical music, you know, from the musical perspective, but also just chamber music, the act of working collaboratively with other artists has been a big part of what I do today. And I think I've gained a certain sensibility for how to work with other people because of my just being around the stage and being around rehearsals and just having that a big part of my life my whole time.
But it's interesting that all of you work with kids in mm-hmm. in sort of unique ways, whether it's music or poetry mm-hmm. or theater.
Yes.
Why is that important? I mean, it's such a silly question because there's something more important, it seems to me, than arts and theater culture kids.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, the kids are going to be the next arts patrons. So it's our duty as artists to cultivate that interest and love of the arts. Even if they don't themselves go into art later, they will go see a play or go listen to music and send their kids to lessons. So it's really important. It was important for us to make opportunities for the young people in Kensington to take part in the arts mm-hmm. because, you know, there weren't a lot of things going on there. And now we have this really great program, and it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. In fact, the program was featured recently on Newsworks and on HYY, working with kids and, I guess, getting them to tell their stories and thinking of that as a form of, I guess, what, theater?
Right. They have. Well, I figured that the kids in Kensington, everybody has stories, and we all have stories to tell, so it's an easy way to tap into that. And with our teaching artists, and our main teaching artist, Hannah Zapatoris-McLeod, visits the classroom and helps the kids take stories from their own lives, which are often filled with, you know, violence and all kinds of terrible things, and through the magic of that, transform it into a piece of theater that they then perform for other kids and the public and the community, where the community gets to share in their stories, and we all walk in each other's shoes and understand each other a little bit better.
And the audience for those kinds of theater productions, everything from schools to families to local police officers?
Yeah, local, and even our deputy mayor, Richard Negrin, came a couple times to the performances. So we had the most recent performance was this Monday, and there were lots of local school kids there, some parents and teachers from the school, teachers from other schools who are interested in this program, and some really great community members who really support what we're doing.
I'm curious, Dan, whether you had a teacher that turned you on to theater.
Wow. Well, I think my background was more in literature than theater itself. So, but I did. I had a teacher, Dr. Bruner, who just instilled in me the fact that if I wanted to express myself through literature, the discipline part that she brought to it—that you got to wake up in the morning and it's got to be your job. It's not, you know, if you think of it as, you know, when inspiration hits me, I'll do something good with it. Then, you know, you're making sure that it stays in hobby status forever. And if you want to work in the arts and make it your life, you have to. It has to be your life.
You have to do it every day.
Mm-hmm. You have to do it every day
in some form.
It's a practice. I mean, it's a spiritual practice, I think.
And everything has to be channeled through your art. All the things that you do in your life have to have some connection to your art for your art to survive.
Does that make sense to you, Alex?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very interesting, to speak of it like that, because I think there's kind of a common perception of artists as sort of lackadaisical, kind of, they just kind of hang out and do the thing. And to be an artist, and especially, I think, to be successful in this kind of economy, you do have to be very disciplined, because most of the artists that I know that are doing well aren't just practicing, their artwork, but they are also entrepreneurs. They're also networking. They're also doing lots of things. They're teaching. And they're wearing so many hats. And so, you know, I think to be an artist and to really be successful today, you really have to be very creative and very disciplined in how you support yourself.
Does that make sense to you, Vision?
Absolutely. As a full-time artist, a wise poet once told me, Bernard Collins, said most times full-time artist means full-time broke. And and you have to find the purpose within that. There's going to be some times where the money's not going to be coming in, but as long as you're disciplined and being proactive, and like Alex said, wearing different hats, being an entrepreneur, being a teaching artist, these things, things will kind of come to you. And to kind of touch on the whole youth perspective, I think it's most important because we are our legacy. We're going to be judged by our legacy, not only just by the things that we do, but the things that we leave and the things that come behind us. So it's so important for us to make sure we're cultivating that so that when it continues, we're good. It's in good hands.
We need to take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. And I do need to quickly reintroduce everybody. The voice you just heard is Perry Vision DiVirgilio. He's a poet coach, artistic director for Philly Youth Poetry Movement, member of Spoken Soul 215. Michelle Pauls and Stan Haliva are the founders of Be Someday Productions, which is based at the Walking Fish Theater in Philadelphia's Kensington neighborhood. And Alex Shaw is a percussionist, a vocalist, composer, arts educator. All four of them joining us today on Radio Times, part three of our five-part series. And today we are talking about Philadelphia innovators, and we're talking with artists about music and culture, poetry, and theater. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Yannick Nezet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra, a new musical partnership, performing Anton Bruckner's vast symphonic landscape, the Seventh Symphony. You can experience Yannick Nezet-Séguin and the Philadelphia Orchestra. Tickets available at 215-893-1999 or at philorc.org. January 24th and 25th at the Kimmel Center, Yannick Nezet-Séguin conducts Bruckner with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
This holiday weekend, American Roots celebrates Dr. Martin Luther King in sound and spirit. Hear reflections on the civil rights leader from Julian Bond, Mabel John, and Harry Belafonte. Plus music for the moment and the movement from Odetta and Johnny Cash, The Roots, and Duke Ellington. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Sunday night at 6 on WHYY. If you tried to get a bank loan to start a small business in 2012, you might have heard something like this.
You don't have any track record, you don't have any money, so we're not going to give you any.
We'll have solutions for small business owners for the new year and your questions. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. It's part three of Philadelphia Innovators, and today we're talking about Philadelphia's burgeoning arts and culture scene. And we have four guests who have joined us, Alex Shaw, Stan Haliva, Michelle Pauls, and Perry Vision DiVirgilio. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'd love to hear from the other poets and musicians and actors and theater people who are listening to us. Vision, I'd love to have you do a poem for us, and if perhaps you could set it up for our listeners.
Sure. We really encourage our teens and just artists in general to be as vulnerable and free as possible with their writing, not so much holding things in. So this is my attempt, and that's kind of where I'm at with my art right now. So this is in that vein. There will be a time. My future son looks back on the decisions daddy made to judge what type of man I was. My unborn daughter will appraise my actions against the gallimaufry of lessons I've imparted upon her. They will look back at my past with rose-colored scopes and believe their daddy was a moral man. And beam with pride, they won't see the stories forced into the wire-drawn margin by revisions of an umbrageous past. This is an attempt to show my future children their human father wasn't always on the right side of history. Hello, my name is Perry DiVirgilio. Most people call me Vision, and I'm homophobic. I never gave thought to why the way others love has any effect on me, but for years I wore homophobia like an unsheathed broadsword on my back. The people me and my friends preyed on were unarmed. They have unmarked memorials on their tombstone scars. They won't remember our faces, only the way we made them feel. For me, it's been mostly through inaction, but sometimes through emblazoned words spoken with a pitchfork tongue. I've stoned my brothers who love brothers, so my brothers who love sisters know I'm one of them. Flagitiously feasted on the insecurities of males we deem too garish to be man, like we are men, and you are not like us, so you are not man. Sat mime as a friend through a bottle at a man we deem too flamboyant to exist. We laughed like enjoying his pain was a prerequisite for masculinity, like we knew what masculinity really was, like we thought all gay men were ostentatious, until I unknowingly went into a gay-friendly bar and saw men who looked dressed and talked like me dancing with men who looked dressed and talked like me. I left because I don't do that gay stuff. I was too afraid that there was going to be a reflection on me. There was a time I was too proud to be that guy I now despise. There are times I'm still that guy I now despise. I've been that guy who's been part-time prejudiced around straight peers, then find solace in the basement of my morals saying, I'm not a bigot. I have gay friends. I have gay friends I can't look in the eye sometimes, knowing there were times I judged the way they made their lovers smile. What type of ally am I when I am almost too coward to attend a friend's poetry feature at a gay festival, when I don't defend a transsexual woman on the bus when she was called it? I am still a homophobic boy who sometimes participates in oppression through inaction by not saying the things I see wrong, by not defending someone's right to be themselves. Oh, the audacity of wanting to be yourself. I pray my friends don't cast the same judgments upon me that I've casted on others. I'm a recovering homophobe, fighting unfounded fear one day at a time. There will be a time. My kids question why all heterosexual people didn't stand up for gay people. They will ask if their father was a homophobe. I will tell them there was a time daddy judged before he loved. I will beg them not to repeat the sins of their father.
Thank you for that. Was that a hard poem for you to write? Talk about being vulnerable, right?
It was, because you kind of put yourself out there and you don't want people to judge you, but on the same token, you've done it. Mm-hmm. You've done that for years to others. And, you know, I don't want my kids to look back at me and say I was on the wrong side of history. That's not going to happen to me at all. You know, and it's time for me. I have a voice. I need to stand up for others who don't.
Do you have kids?
I don't, but one day I plan on having kids.
Right.
So I don't want to be that guy. While I have a voice, I need to use it for the right reasons, yeah. You know, and I have a platform. I need to use it to stand up for people.
Have you read the poem to other people?
I actually just wrote it last week. I read it to a couple of friends. It's a brand new poem, you know, and it's kind of like, I figured, you know, what a perfect time to put it out to the public, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Were you nervous reading it or you know, putting it out to the public?
No. I mean, yes and no. No, because, I have a platform and I got to use it for the right reasons. And I have friends who need me to speak up for this or tell their story.
I wonder if that's sort of part of what you do, Michelle, when you work with young people, or even as a actor yourself and in the world of theaters. It's about exposing those inner
Well, yes, yes. As an actor, you have to be vulnerable. You have to let yourself be vulnerable, and you have to be naked on stage. Yeah. I mean, figuratively, if not literally. And what we do with Of Mythic Proportions, too, with the kids at in Kensington is asking them to be vulnerable, and often teenagers, who wants to be vulnerable, you know, asking them to dig deep into their insides and share these stories with people they don't know well. So that's a lot of work, yeah. And it's very brave how they're able to do it. They are, after much, you know, the whole semester. We do some yoga to warm them up and, you know, focus them first, and they, you know, rail against that, but then they enjoy it. So it's so important to be vulnerable as an artist, and it's not easy, but it is. It's really important if you have a voice to share your voice with the world.
I don't know if it's different for you, Alex. I mean, you have a voice because you're a musician.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about what everybody's talking about with education. I've worked with a wide variety of populations with the work that I do, from you know, very like pre-K all the way through seniors. Something that comes to mind, just in terms of the idea of vulnerability, I've done, you know, for many years in the summers, I've worked with adjudicated youth in Camden County, and you know, in certain locations where I think a lot of artists may be a little intimidated or overwhelmed to try to enter into these spaces, and when I come into, you know, to these spaces and work with some of these youth, you know, my idea, I tell them from the beginning, is not to, you know, I'm not here to turn you into a musician. I'm here to share something with you, you know, a passion. I have respect for, you know, for where you're coming from, you know, and they have to work together. They're not working together in under circumstances in which they necessarily are choosing, you know, but the nature of the artwork forces them to collaborate and to kind of come together and work as a team. And I think that's been some of the most transformative, you know. A lot of the work that I do through my music, through the percussion, is modeled after organizations that I see in Brazil doing the work and giving youth and other people a voice that may not always have a voice, you know, in the public. These are populations that may be more marginalized, but having the music, I remember this musician, very famous musician, Carlinhos Brown, talking about when you have a kid, you know, a group of kids in the street playing the drums and people go by, you have no choice but to listen to what they have
exactly,
to say.
Yes.
You may
yes.
not hear them any other time, but when you hear them play, you have to listen to what they're saying. And so I think that's you know, it's a great, you know, symbol and metaphor for all the work that we're doing, you know, giving them a voice.
Well, and I always think of percussion as, you know, things like heartbeat, sort of how our bodies work.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways I have it easier than, you know, than dance or theater, and the type of vulnerability that requires for, you know, for young people to kind of enter. People love to hit stuff. Doesn't
yes.
matter how old you
yes,
are.
They do love
and
it.
And so
yes.
I kind of have it easy in that way, but the idea, you know, the challenge is figuring out how to focus it and direct it in a way that feels productive and feels like it's rewarding and giving them, yeah. you know, giving them a voice. So.
Stan, let me go back to you, and I like the name of your theater, Walking Fish. I assume that's some shout out to Charles Darwin or has something to do with evolution.
I kind of think of my spiritual connection as Darwinism.
Oh, do you?
And so it's kind of a spirituality of commonness, of everythingness. And like many other things, like a career in arts, it can only be viewed backwards, never forwards. One can't guess at where evolution will take the next step. and so it is a shout out to that, and to the unclassifiable nature of. Or we embrace the fact that our art covers so many facets that we didn't want to put it into a category.
Sure.
And
sure.
So, you know, a fish that walks is kind of, you know, something that's hard to describe, something that's hard to categorize, because it's you know, neither fish nor fowl, as they say. So,
because you do burlesque, you do kids stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, you do mm-hmm. a really interesting variety of performances, I guess, or productions at Walking Fish.
We do. Part of that, I think, to be successful in a neighborhood as we chose to be, rather than to be somewhere else, like on Theater Row, we felt that we figured out pretty quickly that, you know, we couldn't start off with our all Strindberg season, because we would confirm what people there might have thought, that theater was designed to make them feel stupid, or that theater was something that isn't for us. So that's for someone else. So we cast our seed pretty far, and we saw what grew. And I think what you have to be willing to do also is to continue to examine your mission, like, on a regular basis, because you know, we started off with that, where we were trying to represent what live arts is to a segment of the community that sure. might not know. And then later, we're now also, we feel, representing Frankfurt Avenue Arts Corridor to a regional population that may already know something about art, but doesn't know anything about Frankfurt Avenue Arts Corridor.
Exactly,
so,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Making connections.
Yes.
Let me just quickly reintroduce everybody. That's Stan Haliva, and he and Michelle Pauls are the owners and creators of Walking Fish Theater in the Fishtown, I should say Kensington section of Neighborhood. Yay! And they also have been working with Be Someday Productions, which is based at Walking Fish Theater. Also with us, Perry Vision D. Virgilio. He's a poet coach, artistic director for Philly Youth Poetry Movement, member of Spoken Soul 215, and Alex Shaw is a percussionist, a vocalist, composer, arts educator, and he specializes in Brazilian music traditions. All four of them are part three of our five-part series, having to do with movers and shakers and dreamers who are doing interesting things here in the city of Philadelphia. We want to hear from you as well at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I won't put this to you, Alex, because you're a Philly guy, tried and true. But do you, Alex, Vision, but do you, Alex, ever feel like I have to go to New York? I mean, that my goal is to do my thing in Philly, and then I'm going to go to New York, or I'm going to go to, I don't know, San Antonio.
Right. No, that's a good question. I think at one time I did feel like that, and I have lots of colleagues that, you know, that feel like New York is kind of the mecca for, you know, for achieving where I want to be in my career. I think that I've been able to successfully navigate not only Philadelphia but also the tri-state region in a way that has been more supportive than if I were just, you know, struggling in New York. I think the cost of living in Philadelphia, you know, I bought a house here about 10 years ago. I don't feel like I could have done that in New York, you know, with the kind of career that I have. I think that the network that I've been able to establish in Philadelphia has really been very supportive and has I think reciprocated the efforts that I've put into the community in a way that I think New York, it may have been, you know, lost, and it would have been not as easy to make the kinds of connections that I've been able to make here in the Philadelphia region, you know.
Michelle, do you feel like you're part of a community? I mean, I know that you put your theater in Kensington, mm-hmm. and not on Theater Row, mm-hmm. but nonetheless, do you feel like you're part of this?
Yeah, I was just thinking what you said, Alex, about making connections in the community, and sometimes when I'm walking down the street on Frankfurt Avenue, I feel like I'm in a small town. Like Kensington is this small town, which it's not. It's, you know, so urban. And people have these preconceived notions about it, that it's unsafe, and maybe parts of it are, but there are so many people in our neighborhood, in our community, who are working all towards the same goal of making our community better, and we are all, you know, I feel we're working together. And so there is this sense of a unified theme, and we all want it to succeed really well.
Can you relate to that, Vision?
Absolutely.
I mean, do you feel that sense of community? I mean, poets, because I think they work more, work in a more solitary way than perhaps other artists.
The one thing I'm seeing with poets right now is they're really expanding. Like I've seen poets and doing things at with comedians and then with magicians, with Randy Shine, and with in fashion at on the runway doing poems while models are walking. So I think we're finally starting to kind of get outside of that solitary feeling. But in general, I feel like Philadelphia is, the art community here is such a community. Everybody, for the most part, is very supportive of everybody else's efforts. If I know that, you know, there's going to be something. This Randy Shine, who's a great magician, if he's going to be doing something, I'm going to be there, because he says it all the time. He uses spoken word and poetry, as, you know, to fuel his timing and things like that. So we kind of take from each other. And I love what Alex said about the reciprocation. What you put in Philadelphia is what you're going to get back out of Philadelphia. And people are very loyal when you kind of stick around. When they see that you're available, when that you're here, that you're doing something in the community, whether it's a neighborhood or just or larger, they respect that and they love you, and they really recognize that and respond to it.
Do you find working with kids that they have that impulse that you had, which is to hide the fact that they write poetry, or have we moved beyond that? Do you think
we haven't. The good thing about today is, and it's kind of bad too, but social media kind of, you know, brings kids together, and it's like, wait a minute, you're a poet, I'm a poet too, kind of thing. So now there's not this feeling of being isolated. However, getting them to dive deep inside themselves is a different issue, and that's why, you know, me and Greg and Denise and the people that work for PYPM, we kind of model that. Like, I'm going to throw myself all the way out there as an example. You do the same type of thing. So it's getting better, specifically in Philadelphia, where we're known, you know, they call it going in and blacking, which means blacking out on stage and just doing everything that you can. Philadelphia is known for poets who put it all out there, and we kind of model that for the rest of the country.
I mean, that's a form of theater, is it not, Stan? I mean, what Vision is just describing.
Oh, yes, that's where... That's what theater. That's how theater exists, right? To be sort of like the eyes and ears of the community, in its way. It's the place where people communicate news to each other, but news about things that are more ethereal than even those that you hear on WHYY.
in our news department.
Yes.
Let me go to you, Alex. And this won't work very well on the radio, but I was reading that you use, I guess, for lack of a better word, martial arts. I mean, there's something very physical that you incorporate into your playing.
I mean, there is an art form that I've been training for many years. It's called capoeira. And there's capoeira is considered to be an African-Brazilian martial art tradition that evolved, you know, under the conditions of slavery in colonial Brazil. But today it's been something that's celebrated around the world. It's a very comprehensive art form that's not only incorporates physical movement and strategy, but also music, arts, oral tradition, and it's very community-based. Mm. And so it's something that it's very complementary and very comprehensive as an art form. I kind of that's complementary to the music that I do, but I think it gives me a wider appreciation for the physicality. I think what I do is also very physical. Being a percussionist itself is being very physical, being very in tune with your own body and your own sensibility of, you know, rhythmic sensibility. So that's a big part of it. And I think also the more program that I'm doing, we make lots of connections. You know, the musicians that I work with don't just work with musicians. We work with poets. We work with theater. We work with other things as well. And I think that's kind of where a lot of the direction is going. You know, the programming that's supported by partner organizations like Live Connections, like New Jersey Council of the Arts, or New Jersey Young Audiences. For example, you know, the programming that we're doing is not just isolating music of its own, but showing the parallels between language and music.
Sure.
Showing the parallels between movement and music and all these types of things. And so I think that's really where we're the type of arts education that I'm very excited about today. It's not like sit down, learn this instrument, but this is how this bridges to another part of your life. Even if you're not going to become an artist, you see how music or poetry or film is a part of your everyday experience.
Hold on to that thought, only because they're playing my song. We have to take a very short break. Talking with Alex Shaw, Stan Haliva, Michelle Pauls, and Perry Vision DiVergilio. They are all of them living and working here in Philadelphia. They are artists, and it's part three of our five-part series talking about the cultural scene in the city. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Inishnua Theatre Company supports WHYY and presents its ninth season of contemporary plays from Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales at the Off Broad Street Theatre. Details at inisnuatheatre.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Dustin Hoffman. He makes his directorial debut with the new film Quartet. When he received his Kennedy Center honor, he was praised for breaking the mold of the movie star as handsome leading man. But when Hoffman starred in The Graduate, people said to director Mike Nichols,
"What a great film you would have had if you had not miscast the lead."
Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A woman who survived a 1991 shooting massacre but lost her parents says if she had her gun, lives would have been saved. She makes an impassioned plea for carrying a gun. Also, writer Nick Flynn on what it was like to see the worst moments of his life, his father's homelessness, his mother's suicide, played out on film. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Speaker Series supports WHYY, presented by Widener University, continuing its sold-out season at the Kimmel Center on January 21st with one of our nation's foremost experts on 21st century warfare, P.W. Singer, sponsored by BNY Mellon Wealth Management.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, talking with Alex Shaw, Stan Haliva, Michelle Pauls, and Perry Vision D. Virgilio. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Michelle, you had a great big breath. Did you hold on to that thought you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, and it had to do with what Alex was saying about even if we introduce kids to arts and they don't become artists, I think what arts do, what theater does, and music and poetry and dance is help young people, help everyone see the world differently so they can grow up to be creative problem solvers. And isn't that going to make our society a better place to live in, our city, our community, everything? So I'm passionate about bringing arts to the community and to the schools mm-hmm. and to young people, because I grew up, I had lots of arts exposure, and I became an artist, but I didn't have to, but you know, I know it helped me. And so arts are for everyone. It's not this exclusive club. It's something we can all partake in, and we should, like a vitamin every day.
Yeah. Do you see it that way, Vision?
Absolutely. I feel like with whether you're doing theater, poetry, dance, whatever it is, it can help you in other ways. For us, I'm not trying to train a bunch of poets to be, you know, spoken word artists when they grow up. That was my path. That doesn't have to be theirs. But it teaches them to, you know, to be better speakers, to not be afraid to speak up, you know, for others, mm-hmm. whether it's on a stage or whether it's in regular life. It helps with peer mediation. And on top of that, you know, right now in public schools, it's being taken out. The arts are being taken out of the classroom. So if there's not an Alex, if there's not a Walking Fish, if there's not a spoken soul or a PYPM, they're not going to have it. So it has to be up to the folks in the community to kind of bring that back into children's lives, because it helps in so many ways. It makes sure that they're not robots. They can't just speak what's on the standardized test. They actually are really human beings.
And I think it also, the arts help other problems. Like our program of Mythic Proportions started out as an anti-violence mm-hmm. program. And, you know, just it had to have that name for grant writing purposes. But it is. I mean, all arts can be anti-violence Absolutely. Programs, because it helps take the energy of that terrific energy of youth and funnel it into creative efforts rather than, you know, the right. other.
Stan, I was reading that you have a BA in Small Business Administration. Has that helped you as an artist?
I doubt it. No, I think it actually has, because when you are, as we do, we also not only are artists, but we also run an arts nonprofit. Right. And you spend more of your time as an arts administrator than you do working your art. And so that's also part of the challenge, is to integrate that into your life and not separate it out from your art, you know, that's just part of what you have to do to yeah. get by as an artist. So I suppose it's helped. I know that the arts helped me in a time when I don't think I could express myself and couldn't express myself in public in any way, or even in private. You know, I was a horribly shy youth who couldn't speak to adults, couldn't look anybody in the eye. But for some reason, I had no fear of public speaking, which is one of those number one fear things. So, if somebody put a piece of paper in my hand and pushed me in front of a group of people, I could speak. And I realized that. And so that's how I chose to
That's great.
Put myself there, where I could overcome all those things.
All of you have such interesting names for what you do. And Alex, you have the Philadelphia Spoken Hand Percussion Orchestra. Spoken Hand.
Yeah, well, I've joined the group You know, after it was started, I think we were on our 17th year. I'm about a
really?
About a 10-year member. That was originally founded by Lenny Seidman and Daryl Kwesi Burgee. But I've been really excited to be a part of that project over the years, and I've kind of directed my section. It's interesting, you know, the Philadelphia. I'm talking about how rich this area is in so many different forms of arts. You know, I think even as a hand percussionist, I think Philadelphia is one of the top cities in the country for the richness and the quality of hand percussionists, the depths mm-hmm. which people go into. You know, spoken hand is a testament. You know, we have North Indian tabla tradition, we have West African djembe, we have Afro-Cuban bata and Brazilian percussion. And these are all traditions that the members within the group study very deeply and have committed their lives to, and we bring those to get together. And that group is an ongoing collaboration within itself. So it's just, I think it's a good indication of just the richness of the diversity and also the commitment to integrity of the traditions in the city, you know, speaking from that perspective. I don't think it's something that could manifest in the same way in most of the other parts of the country. You know, Philadelphia is very special in that way.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, you're not on the Avenue of the Arts, but I wonder whether in the last, I don't know, decade or so, there's been so much interest in developing the arts community in the city. Has that been a benefit, do you think, Michelle?
Yeah, definitely. There's more interest in our neck of the woods. People are venturing out to Kensington to see shows and music and burlesque, and there's lots of poetry, and there's lots of musicians living in Fishtown and Kensington.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely.
And it helps that it is affordable, right?
It's affordable, and there's free parking everywhere.
Yeah. We're close and it makes to a big difference.
Yes.
It makes a difference. And are you here to tell us you can make a living as a poet?
Absolutely. I think you kind of have to be diverse about it. Again, for me, the most money I make is as a teaching artist. But with that, when I do a show, I'm doing a show at Loyola Marymount University in California in February. They're bringing me out as a teaching artist and as a performer. So, you know, once you start kind of diversifying your artistic portfolio, you know, that's when you have other different opportunities to make money.
Well, and I hear that from all of you, which is that you have to be able to do many different kinds of things and to cobble together, I guess, a living.
Yeah, I think what he's talking about, teaching artists, when I was a kid, that was never one of the boxes on the list of what you want to be when you grow up, you know?
Yeah. True enough.
And that's something that I think I've gained a lot of respect for, because, you know, we all know about being a musician, or being in theater, being all these other things, but I think being a teaching artist is something that I have come into in my career in Philadelphia. You know, I was actually able to transfer, you know, I went through a program at Asian Arts Initiative, for example, that was dedicated to trying to turn visual artists and performing artists and giving them skill set in teaching artists. And I did, you know, coming from a more conventional background of learning music, it's not, you know, in that case, it's not just about teaching somebody technique, mm-hmm. but it becomes more about looking at the ways in which this art form, you know, is connected into other parts of your life. So I've, you know, a big part of my income as well comes from that, you know, working as a teaching artist. And like I said, it's supported and it's a big part of the relationships that I have with other organizations that are being a part of that. You know, we have to partner with that. We can't do everything. I have a lot of respect for the Walking Fish. They're doing a lot of stuff on their own, writing grants and everything. Sometimes, you know, it works better to partner with arts organizations that are dedicated to doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of my colleagues work as well.
And yesterday we were talking about technology in Philadelphia and all the startups and people that are doing interesting in the world of technology. And in my mind, there's such a crossover now between art and technology. Do you see it that way, Michelle?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was speaking to, we had a group that is making a film, and they wanted to have scenes of the film for a backers event at our theater. And I got to talking to this fellow. He wants to bring that kind of entrepreneurial meeting for backers for film, and I said, why not theater?
Sure.
So a season of theater. And so, I mean, the sky's the limit. We're just boxed in by our imaginations, right?
Absolutely. I think that the beauty of today is, you know, the kids that I work with, won't have to work as hard in conventional ways that I did. When I first started being on the poetry scene, there was no YouTube. You know, there was no Chinatown bus or boat bus.
It
was
like,
you know, you were on Amtrak, you were on Greyhound.
You were walking to New York.
So now, you know, kids can use YouTube as an avenue to kind of book gigs and as an electronic press kit instead of actually going to the post office and sending out a press kit hoping it arrives at Cornell or somewhere.
I do auditions through YouTube.
It's a beautiful thing. Skype as well, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Here's to technology. I think we have some callers. Is that, I believe, Philip from Newark, Delaware? And Philip, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Good morning to you both. I found your discussion really fascinating. My question concerns this. Education in performance poetry, oftentimes in an academic environment, it's very academic poetry. But I wonder if you have any ideas about what should be included in a workshop in performance poetry, sort of things you're talking about that incorporates everything from capoeira to combining with other art forms and monetizing the craft of poetry.
Philip, thanks for the call to Radio Times. That's in your court there, Vision.
I think it's important to learn the Emily Dickinsons, the Walt Whitmans of the world, so that you have a basis of, so that you, that, you know, no matter what you're going to do, you need that kind of that technical side of it. And to us, that the page poetry is kind of that technical side of it, so it's important to learn it. But it's also important to kind of push kids to be themselves, and whether it's, you know, whether they have whether their background is more hip hop or jazz or R&B or whatever, you tell them to incorporate that. It's okay to have a hip hop flair when you're doing poetry. There's going to be some people who look at you that that's not poetry. Well, at some point somebody was telling them what they were doing wasn't poetry. At some point they were telling the beatniks that that's not poetry. They were telling Gil Scott-Heron that that's not poetry. So you have to kind of make sure that you're letting them be themselves while you're also teaching that kind of background and pushing them to think outside the box. You know, if you dance, if you like to dance too, dance while doing poetry. There's a tour called There's a tour by Mark Vamuthi out in California, When Words Become Dance or something, I forget the name of it, When Words Become Flesh, actually. And he does dance and poetry in it. It's absolutely amazing. He's a ballet and hip-hop dance and all of this while he's doing poetry with some other dynamic poets. So it's not just one thing, and that's important to tell people. It's not just one thing.
Philip, thanks for the call. Stan, you want to say something?
Well, yes. A couple of things that Vision said struck me. One was, you know, earlier when you were talking about hiding what you are, and then using poetry as a way to not hide. Well, you know, I'm also thinking that part of being a teaching artist is teaching things that you don't always understand yourself.
Yes.
It's things that you don't always know. It's not like a math problem where x times y equals xy. You know, this is where you have to take, you know, if you're teaching a kid something about what's inside him or her, you're teaching something that you don't know because you don't know what's inside them. But you know that on the stage, there is nowhere to hide. I mean, you could try, but your hiding becomes evident.
Yes.
You know, when you walk out on a stage, there is nowhere, there's nothing to hide behind.
Do you feel that as a musician? I mean, you have your instruments.
Sure. You know, I think instrumentalists might not experience it in the same way as maybe a vocalist might experience it. But, you know, for me, I remember doing recitals in the more of the classical music sphere and feeling very uncomfortable and feeling very self-conscious. And once I got into the type of music and that type of art that I really had a passion for, I love being on stage and I love performing, and it's just something that I think is one of my best voices, you know, and voices not literally, but voices as my artistic expression.
I know you have an upcoming season, and I love the name of it, Comedies About Things That Aren't Funny. That's so funny.
Oh, thank you. You get it.
Yeah, so who thought that one up?
Stan,
that's you.
Well, that is me. I mean, it's the kind of thing that theater artists or artists understand right away, I think, because, you know, we at Walking Fish Theater, but we're not, you know, singular in this. We like our tragedies to be funny, and we like our comedies to be very sad, you know. And so we're always looking for that. That's where the edge is. That's where the thing is. If you do things that people expect to happen and they line up the way that people expect them to line up, then where, you know, where's the discovery? Where's the journey toward something, enlightenment of some kind? So we want to you know, let them know ahead of time that they're going to get turned on their head a little bit. And that we think this is funny, but you might not necessarily. You might leave saying, well, that wasn't funny.
But that's
okay.
Anyway.
That's okay. Right.
Take a risk. Well, on that note, it's been a great pleasure. Stan Haliva, Michelle Pauls, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Perry Vision, D. Virgilio, thank you very much as well. And Alex Shaw, thank you for joining us as well. I'm going to come back to you, Alex, because you're going to set up our close music. But let me just make this announcement that you can catch up with Alex Shaw at Alo Brazil's annual 2013 Carnival, Saturday, February 16th at World Cafe Live. Vision will also be at World Cafe Live performing the next Harvest Youth Poetry Slam on Wednesday, February 6th, and you can hear some of Philly Youth Poetry Movement and their Poetry Slam at West Philadelphia's Rotunda this Saturday. Michelle Pauls and Stan Haliva's forthcoming production, again, Criminal Genius, begins this on March 6th, and it runs through the 30th at Walking Fish Theater in Kensington. And we're going to close things out with a piece of your music. Alex, I wonder if you could set that up for
us. Sure. This song is called Dia de Praia. I actually kind of created it for a feature that was going to be on this new website, Philly in Focus, that we launched last year. And some filmmakers, friends of mine, asked me to be one of the artists that they wanted to profile. So they saw me do a piece, a solo piece, which I was using a loop station to set it up, using percussion and vocals. Well, I didn't want to just do that on screen, so they created a video around it, and I, you know, created this piece. So Dia de Praia is basically Portuguese for day at the beach. It's kind of a fun little tune, and I did all the music and did all the percussion and vocals. So thank you for playing it.
Well, thank you very much, all four of you, for joining us today on Radio Times. Bob Alsey, engineer for today's edition of the show. The show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes for more information about the program.
Me chamou pra levantar. Venha, meu irmão, pois o sol já vai raiar. Hoje dia de praia, ya ya. Hoje dia de praia, ya ya. Pegue seu tambor, o batuque vai começar. Lindas águas salgadas, as problemas vão desaguar. Hoje dia de praia, ya ya. Oh, hoje dia de praia, ya ya. Biribabate, me chamou pra levantar. Venha, meu irmão, pois o sol já vai raiar. Hoje dia de praia, ya ya. Oh, hoje dia de praia, ya ya. Pegue seu tambor, o batuque vai começar. Lindas águas salgadas, as problemas vão desaguar. Hoje dia de praia, ya yeah, ya yeah.